The Gospel of the Lord.
Praise to you, Lord Jesus Christ.
So I'm going to test you today. See if you're paying attention. All right? So what is the one word that is in all three readings this weekend? One word. All three. I'm going to stare you down. Anybody? Is anybody listening? Harden not your heart? No, not that one. That's a good one. One word that's in all three readings. Faith. Somebody said it. Faith. There it is. Well done. You get a gold star. Faith. That's the theme of the readings today. If you remember in the first reading, the prophet Habakkuk says that the just one will live by faith. It says at the end of the reading. Second reading, St. Paul says that we are to live by faith and love. And then, of course, the opening line of the gospel, the apostles say to Jesus, increase our faith. So that word runs through all the readings. So a lot of people think they know what faith is. And a lot of people today, you know, they say the statistics say that like 80% of Americans say they believe in Jesus, believe in God. You know, and that doesn't that strike you kind of strange? If that's the case, if 80% say they believe in God, shouldn't our culture be a lot different than it is today? I think so. Maybe part of the problem is people don't really know what faith is. We say, I believe in God. Okay. Well, what does that mean? What does that really mean? Is it kind of like, you know, Star Wars, may the Force be with you? Don't get me wrong, I like Star Wars. But that's not faith. And faith is a very specific thing. Let me tell you a story. Okay, I'm going to have faith in you. You're going to laugh. This is a joke I'm going to tell you, so I'm prepping you, okay? So get ready. All right, so there's this guy named Fidelis. Fidelis is Latin for faith. And Fidelis lives in Africa. He's walking along one day, and all of a sudden he hears this rustling in the trees and the bushes. And he turns around, and there's a lion looking mighty hungry. So he takes off, and he runs, and the lion starts to chase him. And he runs and he runs and he looks behind and he sees that the lion's getting closer, runs even faster. He's running so fast and he's so filled with fear that he runs right off a cliff. And down he goes and there's this one branch sticking out from the cliff and he grabs onto that branch. And he's holding on and he's crying out for help. Somebody help me, somebody help me. Now he doesn't hear anything, he just keeps on crying. Please. Fidelis, I hear you. And he says, well, who is that? Somebody help me. He says, this is God. And then God says, Fidelis, let go. And Fidelis says, hey, is there anybody else up there? Yeah. See, that's a lot of people's idea of faith. As long as everything's going okay, as long as things go along as they will, faith. But when you find yourself in a situation where you've got a risk, where you're not in control, that's really, isn't it, the test of whether you really have faith. And I'm not saying necessarily that we're going to find ourselves in these kind of extreme situations, but on a much more ordinary sense, there's all kinds of moments in our daily life when God is calling out to us and saying, surrender. Let go. Do this. You know? And again, that's hard for us. We all like to be in control. But faith is that attitude of trust. And again, like Fidelis, hold on to the branch. You really trust me, Fidelis? Apparently not. Faith is really, as essence, it's trust. And then it translates into a way of life. It's not just words we say. That's not faith. It's a whole way of life that we live. Now, of course, we're sinners, and we don't always obey the Lord. We don't always aren't always successful in saying yes to God. Well, we know. We know we're sinners. But have I decided, have I made up my mind that I am going to day by day strive more and more to live by faith? Of course, we're sinners, but is that our goal? Is that our intention? That's really important for us. See, there's a lot of voices in our culture today, very anti-faith voices.
Bill Maher, Christopher Hitchens, the list goes on. Atheists, agnostics,
cynics, critics of the church. And they say things like, well, faith is unreasonable, prove it to me, blah, 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 blah. You can't measure it, you know, so therefore it's useless. Science is the only, you know, reasonable guide, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there's a problem with that. Again, the Catholic Church does not have a problem with science or reason. In fact, St. John Paul II wrote an encyclical called Faith and Reason. And he says the two work in harmony. But he also says they're different. They're different. Faith and reason are different. They're both seeking truth, but in a different way. So science measures and calculates and all those good things. Nothing wrong with that. In fact, if you know anything about science, you know that the Catholic Church, in many instances, is in fact the origin of many of the scientific principles of our day. For example, the very scientific method that scientists use today was invented by the church at the universities which she herself founded. People like Gregor Mendel, a monk way back in the 1500s, who was studying in his garden, the monastic garden, and came up with genetics, the very origins of the science of genetics. And goes on and on and on. There's all kinds of people, intellectuals, believers throughout the centuries, who never saw the contradiction between faith and science. They recognized it was a different discipline. But both are seeking truth, but in different ways and different kinds of truth. So we welcome science. We're not afraid of it. But at the same time, faith is as authentic as science, but it's different. Because, for example, faith seeks truths that in many ways are sort of above our ability to calculate and be precise about. Let me give you an example. Love. We all believe in love. We all desire to be loved. But, I mean, can we calculate that? Can we measure it? No. But it's truth. We seek it. We want it. We want authentic love. But it's not like science. You know, we can apply that to our relationships when we say faith in God. You know, would we ever apply the norms of science to our relationships, our wife, our husband, our children? Well, let me calculate that. Let me get a precise measurement here. No, we would never speak like that. You know, we're talking about a relationship. We're talking about something we grow into, something that we take a risk. There's faith in relation, and so much so with God. God, who is so much greater than all of us put together. Again, that same way that we approach God. No less truthful, no less authentic, but different. Different than the ways we see science. Again, most people say today, you know, I believe in God. What does that mean? What does that mean? This is what St. Paul says. He says in a letter to the Galatians, he's sharing in an intimate moment his testimony of faith. And he says this, my life is not my own, but I live now in faith in the Son of God who died for me and was raised. Listen to that. You know, when people say, I believe in God, what do they mean? Paul says something very specific here. My life is not my own. Surrender. Did you notice that? It's his opening salvo. I've surrendered my life. You know Paul's story. He was persecuting the church, trying to kill those Christians. And on the road to Damascus with letters from the synagogue, ready to get rid of them Christians, ready to destroy the church, he had that encounter with Christ. And his life was completely changed. All his plans changed. All his, what he thought was important in life changed in an instant. And he spent a long time learning the ways of the Lord. And then he started to preach the gospel. It's an amazing thing. But again, there it is. My life is not my own. He discovered that personally. Have we discovered that? But I live now in faith in the Son of God. It's a very specific faith he's talking about. Not just some God up there, not some force, but the person of Jesus Christ. And who is this person? He died for me and was raised. You see, there's a very specific sense in which Paul is talking about faith. Jesus says in the gospel, if you have the faith the size of a mustard seed, you would say to this mulberry tree, be uprooted and planted in the sea, and it would obey you. Now, again, we approach that line in the scriptures oftentimes wrongly, because immediately we think this is about power. This is about having power. If I say to that oak tree, I say to that mulberry tree, be uprooted, wouldn't that be cool to be able to do that? To command something like that, and boom, it would be done. That's not what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about actually the opposite. He's saying to us, it's not about being powerful in the worldly sense. It's about being powerful in the sense of faith. Okay? In other words, if we were to become so surrendered to God, so willing to trust Him, we would then begin to operate in a totally transformed existence. And we would begin to see amazing things. That's what he's talking about there. If we could trust God, if we could surrender our lives, we would begin to see things as Paul did, as all the saints did, and even begin to live as Jesus did. That's what Jesus is talking about here. And as a transformed person, then the faith that flows in me and out of me would change the lives of others as well. That's the power. That's the mulberry tree that Jesus is saying we could move. I'll give you an example, a specific person. Again, we've been talking about her a lot lately because she was just recently canonized, Mother Teresa, St. Teresa of Calcutta. And if you know her story, again, in the very beginning, she started out, she was already a nun. She was in an order, religious order, that taught in India. And then she began to sense this call from God. Teresa, I want you to go out and care for the poor. I want you to leave this comfortable life. I want you to go on the streets and begin to live in total abandonment to me. And I'll show you. And she did that. She got permission from the authorities to begin her community, the Missionaries of Charity. And literally, the first day that she got that permission, she went out on the streets, no money, no convent, no resources, and she just began to work. She began to go on the streets, and very soon a person gave her a space. And she began, her very first work was a house for the dying. Because in India, you just walk around the streets and people are left to die on the streets. It's shocking. Shocking to us, especially in the West. And she just literally began to pick them up, bring them to her house for the dying. She'd clean them up, pray with them, be there with them, so that they could at least die in dignity. And you know what happened slowly? More women came to her. Some of the nuns that she had been with in the convent, they joined her, and then more and more. Not only that, what's really powerful is in those early days, again, she was not always Miss Famous and Miss Popular. They hated her, especially some of the Hindus around her. And her house for the dying was immediately across a Hindu temple. And there were literally riots. The Hindu priests, the Hindu fanatics would come out and they'd threaten her. She didn't care. She just kept on doing what she did. You know what happened? One of the very Hindu priests that in that temple that had cursed her and threatened her life became very ill. You know what happened? They threw him out in the streets. It's part of the Hindu religion. You're only getting your karma. You're getting what you deserve. And they left him to die. They abandoned him. You know what Mother Teresa did? She picked him up, brought him to their house to the dying, and she began to minister. She cleaned him up. She fed him what she could. She began to pray with him and comfort him. And his whole life changed in that instant. He couldn't believe that here this woman that he was threatening her life was now caring for her. That's a life transformed. And now the Missionaries of Charity are on every continent in our world and in almost every country of our world, ministering to the lost, the poor, victims of AIDS. I mean, it goes on and on and on and on. And that's because one woman trusted God enough to say, I'll do whatever you want, Lord. You see, that's a transformed life. That's the life you and I can also have if we will surrender our lives to the Lord. Now I'm going to go into sort of dangerous territory with you. Okay? I'm going to talk a little bit about the elections. So don't worry, I'm not going to tell you who to vote for or any of that stuff. I want to talk about something deeper than what's going on in terms of the presidential race or who's running for office. Okay? Not that we shouldn't vote. You know, I'm a new American citizen. I became a citizen last January. Said to the Lord, wow, thanks, Lord. You know, first election I could vote in. What am I going to do now? You know? And I think a lot of us feel that way, don't we? So again, I'm not going to comment about that. We need to pray. We need to vote. We need to discern who is the right person for the various offices we're going to vote for. I'm not going to talk about that. It's not what I'm going to talk about. I want to talk about, I think, an undercurrent that has been there all along with a lot of people. You know, and that is, where is our culture heading? Where is our society heading? If I vote for so-and-so, or if I vote for so-and-so, what's going to be the implications of that? And I think a lot of people are worried, and rightly so. I think that we should be concerned. And so we need to really pray and ask the Lord for help in who we're going to vote for. And I think we need to do our homework as well. But let me say something that's even, I think, more fundamental than the actual process of electing candidates. And I'm going to say this to you, and I really want you to think about this. In November, when the elections finally come and all the ballots are counted and all that, we find out what's the future, I want to say this. It doesn't matter who becomes president. Yes, it matters in a sense. Yes, don't get me wrong. But in the end, it doesn't matter who's president, who's in Congress, who's in the Senate, who's the dictator across the world? Who's the tyrant? It doesn't matter. Because the truth is, whoever is in elected office cannot stop us from doing what is right. Can't. They come and they go. Have we so put our trust in the political system that in very real sense is so broken in our country? Have we really made that our God? Do we really believe? Now again, not that I'm saying don't take this election seriously or don't vote. Not at all. Not at all. But in the end, you and I living by faith in a transformed way, and that faith pours out into our lives, into the lives of others, we can do much more than any politician can, folks. And that's what God is counting on, I believe, on us in the church. No matter what happens in November, nothing is going to stop us or can stop us from doing what is right. And you know, if we are no different than the rest of the culture, if people, secular people, friends who don't believe, people we know, co-workers, if they can't see anything different about us, then we will accomplish nothing. I don't care if everybody you hope for gets elected, doesn't matter. It's about you and I living that transformed life in faith. And that faith becomes a transformative agent in the lives of others. That's what I think we are facing as a country. Now I want to talk very briefly here as I end my homily about, and I mentioned this a number of weeks now, the Diocesan Assembly. You've heard me talk about it a little bit. It's been in the bulletin. What is that? Maybe some people still don't understand. What is that about? This is our bishop. This is our bishop's work of evangelization. He's inviting the whole diocese, every single one of us, to participate in the process of evangelization. And so 2 years ago, we had an assembly, right, called the Household of Faith. And that's where we had an opportunity as churches, as parishes, to look at ourselves and say, how can we become, as parishes, more effective ministers of evangelization? Now, 2 years later, we have the next assembly, and then 2 years from now, we'll have the third and final assembly. But this one is called the Lost Sheep, and that's why, after having prepared our hearts, now the bishop and the church is asking us, who are those people in our lives that are the lost sheep? People stop going to church. People we know at work, family, friends, who maybe, for whatever reason, have stopped believing. And I just want to say one thing. Again, continuing in this theme of a transformed life. One of the speakers at this assembly, I really want to encourage you all to pray and think about coming to the assembly if you can. One of the speakers at this assembly coming up is a man by the name of Curtis Martin. Now, you may have never heard that name before. It wouldn't surprise me. But you will know of his ministry, the effects of his ministry. Curtis Martin, when he was a young man in college, he was looking around him and he was noticing all these Catholics going to colleges, going to universities where he was, and they were leaving the church and losing their faith. And it bothered him. And he prayed about it and he felt God was calling him to do something about it. So he started a ministry called Focus. Basically, it's the fellowship of Catholic colleges and so on. So I can't remember the whole name, what it stands for, but it's basically a ministry, and we have it here in Michigan at Central Michigan University and in Ypsilanti at Eastern University. The Focus Ministry is on the campus there and is doing wonderful things. In fact, some of our own young people have been affected by the ministry and work of Focus. My friend, Father Bob Rogenbach, he is the chaplain of Eastern University down in Ypsilanti, and he's the chaplain of the local Focus, and they work with his parish. And it's literally within weeks of them arriving a couple years ago, he said, you know what, Dennis? Confessions have gone up. More young people are coming to church. Masses are packed. They're in there amongst the college students. That's the whole purpose of their ministry. They live amongst the college students. They do Bible studies. They reach out. They evangelize. They encourage the young people and build up their faith so that these young people aren't lost in this very secular environment. And again, one man with surrendered to God's vision. Look at all the... And it's all over the United States and Canada. In fact, it's international. Again, nothing is impossible for God. Nothing is impossible when we are living that transformed life. So you and I today have a choice. Okay? We can be like Fidelis. Anybody else up there? You know? We can live in fear or we can live in faith. That's the choice that you and I need to make today. Are we going to live by fear, wanting to be in control, desperate to be in control, or are we going to live in faith in the Son of God who died for me, died for you, and rose again? God bless you.